Ignore it. This is over at 1:30. You know, that's it. She is not coming back this afternoon. Huh? Yeah, I know, but I had, you know, I had you totally tied up for the next 2 days. Captive audience. But it's not true. That's my complaint. How about the rest of you? Question and answer. Who? You have? Yeah. Enmity is having enemies or being an enemy. Comes from enemy. Inner or outer. Having or being towards oneself as well as, you know. Be nice to be free of it, wouldn't it? You know. It's not a bad little aspiration. Alright, there's a question over here first, and then I'll get to you, okay? Yeah? And loving kindness, when it is fully developed, becomes the experience of boundless beauty. When one has established a sense that oneself is wholesome and the universe is not about to destroy you for bad behavior, the universe is not vindictive, then you can move into the other three practices, which are compassion, which when it is expanded becomes the awareness of boundless space, sympathetic joy, which when it is taken to its completion becomes the full dwelling in boundless consciousness, and equanimity, which when it is fully expanded becomes the awareness of no thingness, that is to say, in that page on the four moras, aware of the play and aware of how one can create realities and then let them go. No thingness. Okay? So I'm probably not going to do such a good job on compassion and sympathetic joy. The loving kindness is basically the best meditation for hate types because it causes them to continuously make choices. And each of these are said to have a near enemy and a far enemy. The far enemy of loving kindness is absolute out and out hatred. The mind that is really caught in hatred cannot see beauty. So you would not do the meditation. You would not attempt to do the meditation on loving kindness if you were just in a rage. You would not. So that's the far enemy of loving kindness. It's the far one because it's like as far away as you can get. The near enemy of loving kindness, of course, is desire. So you would not choose, if you're doing loving kindness by categories, then you pick specific objects for your first practice of loving kindness. So you would not choose your sexual partner as the first object you choose, because pretty soon it would stop being loving kindness and become much more pointed. And you get caught up in lust and desire, right? So the near enemy, the one that's close to being the same kind of energy for loving kindness, is desire, lust. The far enemy is hatred. The near enemy of compassion is grief. You can see that? How compassion can suddenly become grief and you just sort of swoon into, oh, this is such terrible suffering. And the far enemy is malice. You know, if you're sort of looking at somebody and say, it serves you right. You know, some of those really great old curses that you read in the Bible. You know, may you rot in 50,000 pieces on the River Nile. And, you know, all your ancestors be born with gangrene. And, you know, those kind of malice. It's the far enemy of compassion. Near enemy of sympathetic joy is possessiveness. Far enemy is disinterest due to aversion. So who cares if, you know, somebody I'll never meet won the lottery? So who cares? I don't want to know. I don't want to expand my world. right? It's a far enemy. If you refuse to move out of your circle, you're not going to practice sympathetic joy.
What was the close one
to? The near enemy for that? Possessiveness. So you start having sympathetic joy for your daughter or son or aunt or uncle or yourself. So you go around and tell everybody your good news 50,000 times. Milk it to death. Like I'm going to do with my photographs of Tasmania when I go back to Canada. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference based on greed or hatred. So you don't want to know someone else, that's the near enemy. That's wrong. It's a far enemy. I better look. I've got it on this piece of paper. Oh yeah, near enemy is just ignoring, just not wanting to be bothered, you know, like why you close your eyes when you meditate. Just have your own personal little space. Why you don't want to see detail too clearly. You don't want to be bothered. Why you get a bunch of habits and you don't like anybody to upset them. Because you don't want to be bothered. You know. A desire not to be disturbed can be mistaken for equanimity. But it's not. Sometimes. And the far enemy is greed and resentment. If there is really strong greed or really strong resentment, you can't practice equanimity. So what I want to do is sort of we won't be able to do a full practice, but as we did with one full practice of one type of developing loving kindness. I chose the kind that I think is most useful for people who live in with a daily world of living in a city and so forth, because it's really hard for you to have a sense of perspective that you're in a universe, you know, and there is space and you can explore it, and there is some part of your consciousness that knows how to explore space at all times. So those things are the basic building blocks for developing the other three. In the Tibetan tradition, they say, may all beings find happiness and the causes of happiness, that's loving kindness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of sorrow, that's compassion. May never be separated from the great bliss, which is sorrowless, that's sympathetic joy. Leaving attachment and aversion toward near and far, may they dwell in equanimity. So each one of those lines can be a full discipline. Usually in the West, when we learn the beautiful teachings in the Tibetan tradition, we don't know that every line is, you know, 2 years of work. So that's what I hope to do, is just show you some of the seeds that is the fruit of, that's growing from. Yes? Is what? Is the far enemy, the farthest away from it you get is, no, not for the hatred type, is when you're in a state of absolute hatred, you cannot practice loving kindness. If you're a hate type, best meditation for you to do is loving kindness.
What about the other type?
Greed type, you probably find yourself sliding over into preferring the near enemy, but that's okay. These four meditations are good for everyone to do, particularly for the hate type. It is useful to do loving kindness, particularly for the greed type. it is useful to do the meditation on compassion or equanimity. Particularly for the delusion type, it is useful to do the meditation on compassion and sympathetic joy. The greed type needs to learn the one taste, rather than always trying to get the really the taste that's going to satisfy them, the one taste of all. Is this interesting? Is that good?
Yeah.
Do you want a piece of paper, old greed type? Would you like a piece of paper? Does someone have an extra pen or piece of paper they could lend you? There are also, these talks, if you're interested, are being taped, and I think that is possible to. It might be possible to get copies of the tapes. So do you want me to go back over something now? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Something that
please
was very profound for me this morning was around being stolen from and the collusion, and I'm forgetting it, and I'm wondering if you'd say some more how I collude to with someone who's stolen from. It's kind of run a bell.
It's so other, isn't it, than the way we usually approach things. So let's go this way. When you're sitting here in your own space, you can say, may I be well and happy, right? And you feel like, you know, there are parts of yourself that you keep ignoring and not paying attention to. And you know they need a little attention. Okay, well, just right now, I'll sort of feel them, may I? And you pay attention to them. If you don't pay attention to them, they're going to steal your attention. Aren't they?
Yeah.
You bet. And then you can say that about this room, you know, somebody needs a pen and a paper. One should sort of be aware of that. Yeah. Just because if they get good notes, maybe they'll practice this teaching well, and then there'll be an easier flow in the community, you know, something that's shared, something that you understand together. Have some way of maybe not even agreeing with, but discoursing on, that keeps the whole mind live and joyous. Right? So it is true that if we are all sitting here in this room having a perfectly jolly time and somebody comes in with an absolute rage and a knife, we're all working with anger. That's like a very blatant example. But whatever emotion is present, we are all working with it. The emotional body, the energy body that I said basically actually extends 3,000, is 3,500 miles if you're into exactness, according to the Buddha. The Buddhist teaching, which is based on the Hindu teaching, you know, your personal energy basically goes 3,500 miles. That's the sense of self, basically. Okay? That's the sense of self. And, excuse me. And, oh, don't you dare do that. Sit down. He's more dramatic than me. I think we should put a big cushion down there, too, and we should be sitting facing both ways. Jhana's principle here. Or, and within that 3,500 miles, of course, you are also linked into picking up, aware of what the people around you are feeling. Unless you practice screening it out. So, in fact, every time there's another being of any type, humans do 3,500, other beings do different kinds. Angels are a little bit better, you know. They go bigger. Earthworms don't go that far. But there is this kind of network continuously that we're all the energy field that we all are and that you can read or feel. So that's why when you do it with a group of people, when you do this kind of moving on into a boundless space, it's a lot easier. because all of you are also aware of who lives where in your environment. So when I say everybody in Hobart, you know, when you say on this planet, then some people know somebody in England, you know, so you're all, do you understand what I'm saying? There's an overlap. What one person feels, everyone has more privy to. That's the foundation basis, you know. There is that part of the consciousness that has the ability to be aware of totality, boundless states. When you're too focused on what you're manifesting as in a form level, in linear time, you don't want to go into that boundless state because it means you have to let go of form. That's called self-grasping. Fortunately, self-grasping is going to be taken care of anyway. Yes. Unfortunately, self-grasping is going to be taken care of anyway. Fortunately or unfortunately, you're not going to be able to maintain your sense of self. Whether you do it through old age or not, you know, your memories are going to go. You want to know how much you think you are your memories? Your sense of purpose, your linear time is going to go. You want to know how much you think you are being able to respond a certain way, doing something useful, being loved by others. So it's very nice to practice these formless meditations to teach yourself what other ways there are of being. In the course of that, you get into the emotional thing, which is when one person is working with anger, everybody's working with anger. So you learn how to work with the ripples in that formless realm, which is what we call emotions in English. Okay. And in the course of that, you begin to understand that if someone steals from me, they were needing, and I knew it long before they stole. One way or another, either in the most remote way, there are hungry people in the world, right? Or a hoarding unawareness of my own richness, right? One way or the other, they are a messenger to me that this is real, and we are all in it together, and it gives me the opportunity to practice generosity. Does that make sense to you?
Sure.
As opposed to what? First Susie and then you? Okay.
Well, I guess I was just wanting to explore or ask how, or get some idea of how one actually works with some of those things when they arise in that meditation. I experience quite intense rage, really, which made it quite difficult.
Beautiful. That's lovely, see? Obviously. Obviously, yeah.
But there's a sense.
What did the rage come up with? What point was it coming up?
About Tasmania. I mean, it was about not wanting to let go of certain aspects of myself that require to let go of in order to be able to.
Exactly. You had to let go of you. So would you say greed type, hate type, or delusion type? Would you say?
Me.
Yeah.
Well, I figured I was probably a hate type.
Don't like to move out.
Yeah.
Don't like to move out.
But when
isn't this a nice meditation to practice? Because you know you don't have to do it well. You just have to do it and be interested. When do I feel less rage? Do you understand? Not I'm not doing it perfectly. But at which point do I feel less rage? And do I get more pissed off going out or coming back in? You understand? You use that beautiful hate mind, which is actually intelligence. You don't just say, oh, well, there's anger, it's not working, which is what a hate type would tend to do. You don't do that. You actually start paying attention. You actually say, well, you know, between the arm of the Milky Way and the cluster of galaxies, there was something else that went on there. What was it? Never mind, I didn't see it. There was some kind of felt sense there. What was that? You train your intellect how to be used other than just finding a way to make a wall. And that's why this meditation is so excellent for hate types. Because it's continuously moving to a new view and allows the mind to practice another way of using the intelligence rather than just one wall. That's it. But I interfered with your question. Did you have... Is that it? Excellent. And during the day, I approve. I approve. It's really good exercise for hate types. 6 times a day, just look at wherever you are and say, I approve. And just watch your reaction. Don't judge it. Just be curious. Just find out who's home. It's a real nice mirror, you know. If you say, I approve of everything that's out there, that means you get to look at what's in here. You don't have to be fixing it. It's a great little mirror. I approve. Not. But I'll take 10 of those, yeah. 6 donuts, yeah. Whatever you do with it, you know. Very good exercise. And read each one of those 4 thoughts. They work. They work. Now, someone else had a question? Yes. A beggar?
Can I ask 2 questions?
I don't know. Can we have a vote here? What do you think? Those in favor of her asking 2 questions, please raise your hand. And those opposed? Okay, yes. You can go for coffee if you want. Yeah.
If you knew already if they were in there, if you were aware and you felt it, what do you do? Is it your responsibility to give it? If you know that it's there?
You have to figure out how you can be generous. Maybe you give money, maybe you do an exercise of imagining them getting, maybe you offer them a sense of kindness or friendship. Maybe you go to somebody else and say, could you help that person? But you make some gesture of generosity toward them. If the person is totally caught in imbalanced energy, you don't want to give to them, then don't give to them directly. You know, there are people who are what we would call hungry ghosts, where if you give them something, it will burn them. There are people who feel like they're owed something, and no matter what you give them, it won't be enough. So if you're going to give, you also have to be aware of who you're giving to and how to give them something that they actually need. You know, but that is the beautiful discipline of generosity. Learning how to give well. And that's basically what the work of the Chenrezig meditation in the Tibetan tradition does. It shows you the 6 lights, the 6 colors, 6 ways of giving. Develops in your being the ability to know what is appropriate compassion for different circumstances. Meditation works. If you do that meditation, practicing those 6 colors and those 6 sounds, you will find that you become more skillful in your generosity.
Have you already worked on those as part of your workshops?
No. I'm debating whether we will do, you know, what kind, depends on what people want, really, what I feel is most useful, but I'm debating on whether we'll do that meditation on compassion or meditation on developing boundless space before you learn how to flood it with different colors tomorrow, or whether we'll do equanimity or what. I haven't decided. I'm very undisciplined. But I'm sure there are people... Do you do a Chenrezig meditation?
We have done these.
Yeah. It's very useful to do as a community, even if you, you know, just you have it floating around and have it at different people's homes or at one center or something, and just, you know, that once a week there is a Chenrezig practice going, even if only one person is there. It's very useful for the community. to know that. Some people might not come, they might be doing it at home. And it is also a wonderful thing to do together. So I highly recommend it as a community work. Any second question, and then you.
This is about green type. I was wondering if it's possible that someone with a green type is less able to screen out other people.
Oh yeah, no. After the fact, we're good at it, aren't we?
Yeah.
After the fact.
Oh, I felt that also being wrong, but there's also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. A green type needs to be more aware of their own reactions.
Yeah.
Which is why you put a fly in their soup. You see, because that shocks them back into being where they are.
Yeah.
Neat, eh? Because it's painful otherwise, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, us greed types hate to admit it, but it's true. And when greed type is transformed, it becomes faith, the knowledge that the universe is not out to get you, balanced by a trust in your own ability to interact with the universe.
What was that like?
Balanced with an ability, with a sense of your own ability to interact with the universe. It has to be balanced, inner and outer. You know, it's what I call equal density. It has to be equal density on both sides of the skin. On both sides of the skin, there's as much livingness, inner and outer. As much opportunity. As much ability to be neurotic. As much right to refuse. You know? So that willingness to feel both sides, the outer livingness and the inner livingness. Or the outer space and the inner space. It doesn't matter which way you work it. Greed types tend to forget about the inner space. Hate types tend to want to negate the outer space. Because it can be so prickly. So uncomfortable. Delusion types like to fog up all the space. Is that your last question? Yes.
When I was doing the walking in beauty, I was thinking, walking in beauty, and there's beauty before me and behind me, and so there's beauty everywhere, so then I must be beautiful as well. But it was really easy to feel the beauty in everything else, but not in myself, even though logically.
Logically, exactly, yeah. My friend. Exactly, my friend. So then you logically say, well, whether I feel it or not, it's there. And I'm going to pretend I feel it, you logically say. And then you start paying attention to your bones. They're quite beautiful, aren't they? That skeleton's lovely. You know, just the way they balance and they move. And how the muscles stretch in your legs when you're taking a step. And how you're always falling into the next step. How gorgeous that is, that we're always falling on our faces except we catch ourselves with our foot. And the beauty of having bones like birds do. You see, the lack of being able to see the self is because you have yourself as an object. So you start taking the object apart. Okay, my bones. Bones walking are beauty. The memories, times you've been happy, they're beautiful. It's when you think of yourself that you have trouble with the self-beauty. The rest of the time, part of problem, you know. I noticed you laughing at a couple of my jokes. So you don't have a problem being happy. You understand what I'm saying? It's only when the awareness is there that there's a problem. When you're looking at yourself. So, you know, take that apart a bit. Whoever that self is that you're looking at with a jaundiced eye. So develop a new eye. in both sense of the word, the one who's looking and the one who's being looked at. Look at your beautiful bones. Or how beautifully your heart does that. Or how you care for people. Like that. And then back. May I be well and happy. May I keep that pulling right through me. Like that. Yeah, and you'd start by pretending. That's just fine. That's just fine. That's why they say you practice meditation. You practice. Do you have a meditation practice? I had a dear friend who is a peer in terms of the time that we have meditated in this life. We have been around. We met the same teachers about the same time and studied with them. And she came, did a retreat with me, and she comes and retreats with me sometimes. And last year she was there for a couple of months to do a retreat with me. And I was saying to her, do you remember 30 years ago when we found this book that said it took 30 years to learn to meditate? And we both went, oh, well, not us. And we just fell over. We were laughing so hard. We're saying, it takes 30 years. It takes 30 years. That's for an average person, you know? I consider myself fairly average. It does. It takes 30 years. You practice. Every once in a while you hit it, and then, you know, it's like riding a bicycle or roller skating. Every once in a while you're right there, yeah, and then clunk, and you get back up, you know. You practice. And then every once in a while you're just flying, and then you practice. And when you consider how long you've practiced developing your neuroses, that's okay. And you got them down pretty good now. I mean, it took a while, but you're good at them. And, you know, some people still do resist them, don't they? You know, every once in a while you got somebody who won't admit that you're better at it than they are, you know, whatever your neuroses is. But you have to convince the world. Arising yoga. Spontaneously arising out of shunya, out of the void, comes you, complete with all your neuroses. In your right hand, you hold a shiny. I remember one time we were making a wand course. We did the Jewish mother wand course. You know, in her right hand, she arises holding a wooden spoon. She's saying, don't mind me, I just cooked this meal for you. And her root mantra was, oy vey shmir. Om, oy vey shmir. And she was a fierce deity. And then we went on and on. This was on a retreat once. A bunch of us Westerners used to meet together about mealtime because we didn't eat, right? Afternoon. So we'd munch on ideas. We had some pretty wild ideas. Why am I telling you this garbage? God knows. Do you have any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Very happily walking in beauty, but a thought kept coming to me, but somebody should weed the rose garden.
Exactly. Now that's lovely. That is lovely to see. Let yourself relax into it. Let yourself relax into that wonderful intelligence that you have. It's like the mind that can see the point, isn't it? The one point that is slightly off. Do you understand me? So allow yourself to appreciate that. Don't believe the story. appreciate the talent. Don't believe the story in when it's pointed at you or anyone else or at a rose garden. But whenever the outer comes, there's that looking, right? That looking, isn't there? So don't believe the story. Appreciate the mind that can see detail with such love. It's either going to be collecting evidence or you can make it into love. That's your practice. Enjoy that you picked a weed, right? Then the next thing you do is draw weeds. Teach detail to go even finer. So don't let it stay in fixed view, that's all. And once you can see that you're caught in fixed view, you can see how you're frozen. So then you give yourself choices. More detail. On, let's go. And let's go. What type of leaf is on this weed as compared to this one? Do you understand?
Yes, I think so. Well, that's not what I would think. That's not what I did with it while walking, was to laugh at myself.
Yeah, which is turn it against yourself, which is what you do. Mm. You know, that's how wonderful. Now you've belittled yourself, that makes everything okay. But it's still hate mind, it's still hatred, but in a fixed view. And like I'm saying, you know, that's been practiced for, you know, 20, 30 years, that arising yoga, and you've done all the, you've done 100,000 mantra. Wouldn't you say? Yeah. So that foundation work has been laid. You don't have to worry about perfecting that. And there are some uses from it. But until you develop another one, you're not going to be able to use it well. There are some uses from it. It is not useless. It is not wrong. You need more perspective to see how to use it. So now perform another one. In one way of looking, it's all arising yoga. See an event and believe it's real. And the thing that's really interesting is that we have absolute power over our reaction. Do you have any idea what I'm saying when I tell you that? You have no choice about what is happening. You have every choice about how you react to it. The car is not being driven on automatic. You are the pilot. Can't do anything about the weather you're flying through, driving through, swimming through, snorkeling through. You can do everything about how you're going to work with the waves and ripples. And how you work with them will move you to the next arising. It's not the world you need to change. You don't need new patterns. You don't need new talents because you'll do them with the same arising yoga, you know? It's new ways of doing what you already do. New motive for being who you are. Not wanting to be the same thing you were yesterday or the day before. Why? Because you pay attention. You wake up. You say, gee, these patterns just continue. Is it time?
I was daring to ask something, you see, about what happened to me.
Yes, please. Is that good, Margaret?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just waiting for you to say just one more. I just, you know, over the years, I just entertain myself and try and do what you say, like your choice, you have no choice of what's happening. But you have the choice of moving on or your reaction. And so I'm always entertaining myself, and I grieve and let go and all those things. And at the moment, I'm going through grief again because of something in the family, and so it just goes on. And I'm not handling it as well as I should or would like to. I really want to handle it really beautifully and not just cry in front of everybody, to have something to say or just be, so that they can feed off me and feel okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So what you have to do is you have to notice you want that, and then you have to want something more. What you have to want to is to know that you are not separate from everyone else. And that's a little harder. Because when these...
That's my greed, isn't it?
I won't even get into that. I'll just say the difficulty is with the sense of separation, of the sense of yourself, more powerful than the sense of, you know, not equal density on inner and outer. Do you understand? So that the consciousness does not have the perspective that allows the emotions just to be winds. Grief, anger, fear, desire are winds. They are winds blowing in space. You know what a wind looks like when it's blowing in space? It makes a change, a movement. There's an energy. So you need a place to let the wind blow. That means to say what I was saying to you. Don't lock your jaw. Don't try to hold yourself back. Don't make yourself more rigid. All that happens is that you get there on top and you're caught by the wind, whirled around in whatever that emotion is, and then dumped somewhere. You have a hangover from it. It hasn't been satisfactory, and nobody else knows what to say to you. Is that clear?
Uh-huh.
Don't do that. Instead, pay attention to your whole body. You will find with grief, with hatred, with jealousy, with anger, that there is a distinct pattern of how you feel it. That the right side of the body will feel more clenched suddenly, or the left side will. You'll be able to feel one leg or not the other. One part of your body will be cold, one part of you will be warm. Do you understand me? You pay attention to detail. Now, you feel the energy shifting with this idea? Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Even just the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then wiggle your toes a bit. Just slowly. Don't look at them. Feel them. And pay attention to the space behind you. Feel as if there's space behind your back. Keep your toes wiggling. You're all trying this, of course. I hope you are. And feel the space in front of you. Feel the space between you and I. It's also supporting you. A little more in front. A little more support. Just relax. You don't have to change your position. Keep your toes wiggling. Which leg do you feel more clearly? Feel the floor supporting you. And whatever the emotion is, you allow it to be there within your physical body. And you say, this is grief arising in me. You don't say, I am sad. You don't say, I am sad or I have grief. You say, this is the wind of grief. This is grief arising in me. You allow yourself to feel it. You know how your body feels when the grief arises. You say, this is anger arising in me. You feel it. Then you think to yourself, in this room, in this neighborhood, there are many people feeling grief. You can write it down later. You can write it down later. And let yourself be aware of that. That your body is feeling a wind of grief moving through it. And there are many people in this neighborhood. Okay? Be aware, there's some little girl somewhere who is just really unhappy. There's some guy who doesn't know what to do with his relationship, with his job. There's people all over this city who are caught isolated in grief. Right? Let yourself be aware of them. And this wind of grief is passing through many people. And for many people, they don't know it's a wind. It's just a temporary moving of the door. Let it go. Just feel it. Keep your body. Be aware of the form through which the wind is passing. You know, many people are feeling grief and they don't know it's temporary. They're caught in it. Here in my body, there is grief. The wind of grief is arising. And there's a bird. And there's color. So for those people who do not have the perspective of the world within which to hold their grief, I offer them the birds. And imagine yourself sharing with those people, feeling the same grief that they're feeling, and sharing with them the birds around them. And allow yourself to feel the birds, the bones, the whole environment. You need to make the space as big as the emotion, or it will blow you away. Is that clear?
Yes.
You're welcome. So that's what you do. You start by paying attention to the detail of how your body feels. You make it physical. What's that song? Let's get physical. Madonna, right? You should be grateful I'm not dancing.
Please do.
I know. So you get physical first. You pay attention to the physical. You actually pay attention. You care. You don't care, but you pretend you do. You pay right side, left side. Where do I feel temperature difference, size, coldness, hotness, upness, downness, inness, outness, you know? Give yourself two choices. Do I feel my right leg is bigger or smaller than my left? Because that allows the mind to go where it doesn't want to go. The mind just wants to swoon out and get caught in this drama. Instead of that, you say, no, we need a little more space. We need to be part of the universe where all beings experience grief, all beings experience jealousy, all beings experience joy. You do not transcend emotion by refusing to acknowledge it. You transcend it by feeling it and not being moved. And you only do that if you know it doesn't harm you. If you can open yourself to grief like a full human being, allow yourself to grieve with all beings and allow yourself to also be aware of what else there is. So compassion requires space. And we'll work with that tomorrow. Then you allow yourself to think of all beings caught in whatever the emotion is. You think they do not all know. Many of them are isolated in their emotion. They do not know that this is an experience of all consciousness. They do not know that it's impermanent. Right? Two things they don't know. One, they're isolated, and two, they don't know it's impermanent. At least I know that. I feel like it isn't impermanent, but I know it is. So if you got your body, you watch it. You know, it comes in waves. In grief, usually three waves. Keep your focus on your body, not on the grief. Keep your focus on your body, not on the hatred. Keep your focus on the body, not on the jealousy. Whatever the emotion is. Watch the tracks of it as it moves through. Watch the wind. Watch the grasses flutter as the wind blows. Don't try to catch the wind. Watch the winds. You know, let the winds blow and keep your body. And then you say, you know, for their sake I offer them, and offer something from your environment that you're aware of that they don't have. Because their mind is closed down, they're trying to do something with the wind. Try to do something with the wind, it'll blow you over every time. Every time. Because, you know, the first time you manage to build a really good stiff wall against it, and then the wind gets a little stronger. So you build a better wall, and the wind gets a little stronger. So you build a better wall. And then you start having tantrums because the wind is blowing on your wall. And it still blows. Until you learn. You are not those states. They are impermanent. Maybe tomorrow we can speak very briefly about the Tibetan, the Dzogchen teaching on how to practice the four foundations of mindfulness. It's very beautiful. Then again, maybe not. Thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Coming up for me strongly about learning to be generous differently. And I'm frustrating myself because I'm remembering situations in my life where I realized that I didn't give generously to one particular person who has difficulty receiving. And I realized that I wanted to impose my way of giving. And I'm still puzzled about, therefore, how best to give to that person.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? There is an exercise sort of similar to the six times of proving a day. It's called the six givings. It's slightly different, and I recommend it. It's a very nice exercise. And what you do is six times a day, you give something consciously. Only two of the things can be material. So, for example, you'd say, I'm going to give my next out. You have to name the giving before you do it. You have to be conscious of it. Because we all give many more times than six times, but we're not conscious of it. So you say, okay, I'm going to give my next out-breath to those flowers. And I'm going to watch it. There, did that. I'm going to give a moment of listening to my right ear. I'm going to give you interest. You know, six givings. I'm going to give you $10,000. Yeah. Only two of them can be material in my mind. I don't have $10,000. All right? Only two of them can be material. Then before you go sleep at night, you remember the six givings. Let's see, I gave an out-breath to the plants. I gave a moment of listening to my right ear. I gave the wish for $10,000 to that lady, you know? Generosity starts with the mind. That's very important to remember. Everything starts with the mind. Mind has two characteristics, luminosity and knowing. Everything starts with the mind.
It's like undoing everything from the way we used to do it.
I hope not, because you know you have learned so many things. You know, just maybe not ignoring what other ways there are of using the same lessons. I hope none of you throw away any of your past. You know, shady and mottled as my past may be. It has given me a tremendous ability to hear a wide variety of people. There aren't a lot of circumstances that scare me. I'm certainly not particularly uncomfortable around people who are supposedly crazy. I've been there and out three times. I know what happens when you're there, and I know what happens when you're not. And I know why I make my choices. I know why I'm moral. I know why I practice, you know, honesty. It's very clear to me. I don't have any question about that. Some of you might have question, but having not practiced it, I don't have any question about why I'm moral. I don't have any question about why I prefer not to harm. I know what happens when I do. It's the best way to learn morality. Gurdjieff used to say that, you know. He said, you can have rules until you have experience, and then you have morality. I think it's true. Because it's what your heart wants to do that is important. Don't get so worried about your mind. Just change it. You know, it's a man's prerogative. Yes? And women can do it too in this state. What we can control what?
From our control situations in our reality and how we perceive things. I just feel like I'm constantly being tricked by my mind.
But you're not. I mean, that's a wonderful defense, and you could probably keep working with that one for a long time and never have to do anything else. So I congratulate you on that stance. Because no one can possibly get in there. That's wonderful if you want to think that your mind is tricking you. Nobody will be able to ever interfere with that. Because you can always prove that it's true. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's right. You are confused. That's different than being tricked. You are confused. And you're not sure what to do. So you're tricked by your mind. Do you understand? That's a nice, safe thing to do. That's a nice, safe thing to do. And you can do that as many lifetimes as you want to. Or you can explore confusion. A desire for an experience other than that which is present is suffering. You don't have to run from me. I'm not going to change you. I'm probably going to enjoy your friendship. So you could explore confusion. You could do that. That's a possibility. And do it in small bits and batches. And then watch how you prefer to have a nice, clear enemy, like my mind. Because that gives you a way to not have to be confused in a certain way. Open your mouth, please. Open your mouth. Well, someone just put their hand on her back. And don't rub. Just put your hand on her back. Open your mouth. That's great. Don't stretch it. Yeah, that's right. Pay attention to the feeling of that hand on your back and leave your mouth open and wiggle your toes. Pay attention to your legs and say, okay, I can be confused. Say that. Okay. Open your mouth. Yeah, leave your mouth open and wiggle your toes. And just watch how this wave passes. Watch how it's a wind. Watch how it's a wind. You have the right to watch this. You don't have to know this. You don't have to be on top of it. You can just be here. Wiggle your toes. Notice how it's changing now. You notice how the energy is changing in your body. Just watch it change. Watch it change. Don't be other than you are. Notice how the thoughts aren't quite so persistent when you're watching your body. They're starting up again now, but just for a while there, they weren't so persistent. Make room for yourself to feel. I also learned something once, which I will tell you. This is a trick, and this is not what I really want to tell you. What I really want to tell you is trust. Trust yourself to be confused. confused. That's what I want to tell you with my whole heart. And think about me if you're caught. Okay? Now here's the second wave. The second wave, open your mouth, wiggle your toes. Imagine that hand on your back again so that you're able to remember where your back is. The second wave is never as bad as the first one. The first one is usually harder. You can feel it's gentler, isn't it? It's just a wave. There's usually three waves of grief. Third one will be like a little burp, you know? Little aftertaste. Just relax with it. Just relax. Watch how the energy shifts. Don't try to change it. Just be present. You can't think and listen at the same time. I discovered this due to desperation. You have to really put all your attention at trying to watch your right ear listening. And of course, you'll think about whether you're doing it or not, but you really put your attention on hearing. You can't think and hear at the same time. So hum and listen to the sound. Pretty soon you're following the sound through your body. Then you're not thinking. But mostly, practice being confused. So I went to this workshop this weekend. Oh yeah, what'd she tell you? She told me to practice being confused. My heartfelt advice for you. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Because I'm going to pack up here, folks. It's enough. Did you hear? Yeah. Not everybody heard you. Do you mind repeating that?
It's interesting to consider what the results are of practicing generosity in the future.
What you're making. Because you know by practicing the neuroses what you're making. So what about if you practice generosity, what would you be making? That's very interesting. Very interesting. Oh, it's a wonderful arena in which the mind can play, that whole chain of cause and effect where that would take one. Yeah. Imagine having to be nice to rednecked, miserable, racist capitalists. Eh? God, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? Because I know we're all a bunch of green labor. Oh, sorry. A few labors here, come on. Your last chance for this morning, afternoon. Any more questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Yes. Yeah. Again, about grief, and you talked before about when you're feeling aware of grieving and then aware that other people in the area are feeling grief. Something that's come up for me a lot since I've lived in Tasmania going to the landscape is places where you know where the indigenous lived here.
When there were massacres?
Yeah.
Things, yeah.
And quite often, quite overwhelmed by sense of grief in the land, and having explored that a lot over the years, the feeling that there wasn't anybody left to do the grieving was an unfinished process. And so I'm often wondering how to deal with that skillfully rather than just to get overwhelmed by it, but also a sense of a real need for it, just to, that there is purpose in that. In it being able to come out. But yeah, sometimes I'm confused that it's not just connecting with something in me.
Yeah, I mean, are you being caught in personal sense of rage and wrongness and grief, which is personal work?
Yeah.
That's not the same thing as what we're talking about today, where you're training the mind to move for the sake of all beings. When you're personal, then you have somebody who is not personal. You have you got somebody who just does not understand. You know, if you're an Aboriginal, you got them damn colonists ripping you off and killing you, you know. So the personal has a history. Is that clear? And then there is an owning of a role in the history. And I'm not saying that that is not important. I'm saying there is also one more step to go where one feels the grief of all the colonists too. That one is not more important than the other. And so that's why the practice was space. So that you can become the enemy without there being an enemy. That's compassion from a Buddhist point of view. That's why it's boundless. This is different, isn't it? This is different than coming across a scene of suffering and grieving for those who are dead. This is also grieving for those who did not die. Which is a very different thing than what you were saying, isn't it? So these are not easy topics.
That's when we did the going from Tasmania out, and particularly of Australia, that was a sense that I had because of the feeling, the potential for this country, for Tasmania and Australia, and what's happening in terms of, you know, like mining and places like Kakadu and things like that, that you know, it's easy to say that then they're doing it, but to be in it, they're not.
We as a planet, we are all part of the consciousness on this planet. We are all part of the consciousness on this planet, and those parts of our consciousness who want to ignore something, because just like parts of your own being that want to ignore some things because you're trying to understand something else. Do you understand what I'm saying right now? Right now, there are things that you would like to ignore because you're trying to understand something, right? That's greed. You know? Do you understand? So all of them. So how to find inside. How to be able to have all of those feelings, which are very human, not only human, very much a part of the struggle to manifest. It is impossible to come into manifestation without suffering. It is damned dissatisfactory being here. There is no way to do it perfect. So there is always going to be greed, hatred, and delusion. So now what? Now what I am attempting to show you is from a Buddhist perspective. Well, this is a totally untenable situation. There is no way to make it satisfactory, so therefore this is what you do in Buddhism. The number one thing you do in Buddhism is you don't deny the suffering. The number two thing you do in Buddhism is you deny anyone owning it. You deny anyone owning it. And then you open the field. So you're not just working with one country called Tasmania, or one country called Australia, or one country called my relatives, or one country called my race, or one country called my planet. Holy shit. Or one country called my galaxy. When you actually start putting your mind out there, you are actually going to meet things you don't expect. Because I cannot conceive of them. It's interesting, isn't it? beings who have, cultures that have a greater operating power on the energies that move between planets don't have any problem conceiving of other places that you could be born. I know that from my Native American teacher. You know, some of those planets have, you know, inhabitants, a couple of them have spoken to me. I know that from my own experience. But that's my experience, not yours. Get your own experience. Have I thoroughly evaded the whole issue as you've presented it? Given it a new framework? Oh, good, I'm delighted, thank you. One of my greatest pleasures is not answering questions. Establishing bigger questions, that's one of my greatest pleasures. That's it, last call, question, answers, comments, or complaints? So there's that little dollop of Tasmanian honey in your heart center. Beautiful warm space. The energy of it just spreads through your whole body. Nice golden, ambery, beautiful, smooth, sweet energy goes down your arms and legs, up through your head. Pours out through your pores, above, below, in front. Right, left, the four diagonals. Moves through walls, ceilings, floors, people, planets, goes through space. This wash of energy, wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, of speech, or of mind, this beautiful energy just washes through as temporarily as washed. And you think, whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you. Okay. And the other thing is, they're doing their lunch from 12 to 1. So how about if we break from 11 to 11:45? Is that reasonable? So that we can be all, the tea room downstairs can be cleared up and we'll be out of there in time for them to do their setup or whatever. Is that it? Is that logistics? That's logistics. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. How you doing from yesterday? Was that interesting? Did you get some overnight thoughts or, you know, my usual? Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Void by the experience. I'm being.
feels really exciting to be incorporating into the time work already.
Wonderful.
To some levels.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Yeah, it's very nice to have a teaching that one can actually use. That doesn't separate you out, you know. For me, that's one of the most joyous things about Dharma, is that it's practical as well as being so philosophically delicious. Anyone else? Have you injured your back or something like that? How did you injure your back?
Process of abuse, disrupted the disc.
Oh, yeah. It's quite painful.
It's moments, yeah.
That's it for questions, answers, comments, and complaints. You remind me with your beautiful ribbons, you remind me of a dear friend of mine who was Ukrainian. You know, and they put these ribbons just almost exactly like that in their hair, or this sort of crown thing that they wear when they're wearing their traditional. So every time I look at you, I think, oh, good, a Ukrainian. Are you Ukrainian? They don't have the, particularly though, the forehead streak. That's a little different.
I did have a question that I've been asking myself and being troubled by for some time, and that's around, how do I know if I've harmed someone? Is the harm in the intention?
Yeah, harm is in intention. Harm is intention. And it's impossible not to harm. If you are going to live, it's impossible not to harm. You either harm yourself or you harm others. So the discipline is to practice not harming. And the practice of loving kindness, when you do it according to the sutra, says, do as much as one is able. Not more, not less. Just that line itself is a wonderful discipline, you know, taking that line for a period of time throughout one's life. I would like to see whether I am doing as much as I am able. You know, and just be curious what's happening with that. Moments when you feel resistance, when your energy is caught in ambivalence. Am I doing as much as I am able? And it goes both sides of the skin. It's not just out there doing good. From a Buddhist point of view, always having to do good is a defense against being present. So that's interesting, isn't it? You have to feel in both directions. It is impossible to live without harming. If you're a vegetarian, you're probably responsible for more lives ending than if you're not. It's all those little bugs that get killed on the rice. Every one of them values their life as much as I value mine. Sorry? It makes an awareness of the fact that life is precious and there aren't any perfect answers. So that one begins to live with the imperfection, which helps one not try to satisfy desire. It is an insecure ego structure that tries to be perfect, that wants to be right. If you've got to have answers, you're probably frightened. If you're frightened, have your answers and try to find out where the fear is and take care of it. Allow yourself to feel the imperfection. It's not so easy, is it? I mean, yeah. Because we'd love to, you know, just have the right answer and wrap ourselves in it and walk immaculately like stainless steel through the universe, you know. And that's basically being caught up in the idea of an inherent self, you know, that can be pure and somehow separate from it and them. And that is not the case. Yeah.
It just feels like at the moment I'm going through this thing where I'm getting used to the fact that I don't have to feel bad about myself.
Excellent.
And it's weird.
It is weird, isn't it? That's right, and there's also that, what do you do with your hands if you're not trying to make yourself better?
I feel like, hey, no, I won't reach for a cigarette, no, I won't go out and make myself feel bad again, because that's what I'm used to, or something.
Yeah.
But then you go, oh, what do I do?
Yeah, what do you do? What do you do? So just pay attention to how you feel.
And then
pay attention to your senses. I know, yeah. Yeah, we get very habituated to a sense of self. And when it starts to change, when that sense of self starts to change, we're also left with the emotions that created that persona. You know that little paper on the four Maras? Were you here? Did you get that? I think I took it out of my purse. Well, I'll bring one. If you come again, you can have it. If not, if you know someone else that was here, they'll give you a copy of it. Feel free to pass on any of this stuff I give out. In the Tibetan tradition, they talk about four Maras. One of them is, you know, look at all the events that happen in a room right now. There's the event that you're aware of, and there's the event that the woman behind you is aware of, and there's an event that he's aware of. And, do you understand? Just in its broadest, most crude term. Everybody here is hearing different words. Okay, just a minute. Don't read it right now. Everybody here is hearing different words, right? Do you hear me? Yeah, good. Everybody here is hearing a different word. This person will pick this word. That one will pick that. Yeah. A lot of teachers, when they teach something, they say it about five different ways because there are going to be at least five different ways that people will hear it. So, because for this person, this word has meaning, but that one sort of slides back. For this person, this one has meaning, that slides back. Why? Why? That's an interesting question. Why do some people hear some things and some people hear others? For this person, this is real, but that doesn't have as much reality. So we continuously take events and then make them our reality. And then they become part of our language as well as the language of what we construct as a self. Am I going too fast? You following me? Yeah, I took a little leap there. So I'll just leap back. I'll have a sip of coffee. I won't have a cigarette. But I will later. So, you know, there are moments that you see. I'll start a whole different way. I'm sitting here in a room. There are 1,001 dimensions happening all around me. All the senses. There are different levels of life forms in this room as well. From little mice and bugs and spiders to angels, right? Not so many birds and horses and donkeys, but there's all kinds of events occurring around here, aren't there? But I'm picking you, and I'm talking to you, right? I could just as easily go over here and talk to this woman, right? And that would become the reality. So out of all of the cause and effect, all of the events that are happening, I pick this one and call it real, and I make that where I'm going to chain myself and move through life. Out of a totality of opportunity, I'm going this way. Does that make sense? And then when you start going that way, did you ever read Robert Frost, Two Roads? He comes to these two roads and they divide. And he's got to choose which one he's going to take. And whichever one he wants, he's going to take, he's going to be thinking about the other one. And we do that all the time, because the road we take then branches into another road and another road and another road. And the roads that you take, in Buddhism they say the sense of self is created from three things coming together. Present supporting circumstances. Who a lawyer is when he's arguing a case in court, and who he is at night when he's making love to his partner, are two different people. Why? Mostly because of present supporting circumstances, wouldn't you say? You know? Propensity, tendencies, called the continuum consciousness, that which moves through lifetimes, which is not personal. And aspiration, desire. So I desire to answer your question. This is a circumstance, and I have a propensity to love to talk. So this is the self that's arising, based on past experience, moving into the future. Right? Now, if I'm going to interrupt that change by that chain, by wanting a new self to arise, wanting to also talk by being aware of everybody else in the room at the same time, change my language so I invite more and more people to take part, or even maybe include angels in the conversation, bing, or even allow a few dust mites, or say a Christian hymn. If I want to just keep opening the field, then my language, the way I'm going to operate, everything has changed. But my habit, if I have never done that before, my habit will be to go back to, well, let's just, you and I have a private little chat in our closet, dear. You know? So, yeah, there is a habitual sense of a self that continuously you get to enter into new understanding. That you continuously try to see with your eyes for the first time. You continuously try to hear with your ears for the first time. Continuously try to feel the space all around you. The space behind you equally to the space in front of you. To me, that's the easiest way to do it, is to focus on space. While I'm sitting here and I'm very aware of the people that are in front of me, I try to have equal awareness of what is behind me. Try it while you're talking to me. Keep looking at me. Yeah. A little more. Isn't that interesting? It is, isn't it? So the sense of self gets to be new while it still has its path. Yeah, you are allowed to do it. There is always a resistance to doing something new. If you do something and you survive, then the next time you do that same action, little endorphins are released saying, oh yeah, this is good, you did this before and you survived. This is what allows you to run upstairs rather than have to start like a one-year-old every time. Wouldn't that be boring? Every time you came to stairs, you had to drop into one-year-old stance and do the little climb thing with your knees. Look back, be terrified. Ah! But you don't. You know, you're addicted to create habitual behavior. Endorphins are opiates. So you're addicted to create a habitual behavior. When you do something differently than you've done before, when you do something differently than you survived before, adrenaline is released. There's more awareness. We don't like to be aware. We like to be opiated. So you can call it resistance, or you can call it, oh, a little more awake now. Ooh, what's this? You know, when you create a new pattern, you don't like it, because you can't go unconscious. See, that's too bad. I'm really sorry about this. Gurdjieff used to say to his students that he wanted them to never walk the same way twice. And they all lived in this town, and they all went to work, and they all lived in the same houses. You know, they weren't supposed to move every week or every morning. So they had to find ways of walking differently in the same offices. I think that's such a beautiful exercise. Never go the same way twice. And so you get used to, so you develop the pattern of yourself as being awake. Nice, huh? Because that's what it is. You don't know who you are, what you should do when you're not doing the habitual. So practice that. What if the whole world is waiting to bring something new to you? Nice, huh? Congratulations. Keep your senses. Keep your sense doors. Sense doors are very useful. Keep your sense doors. They're very useful. Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints? That's true, isn't it? Endorphins and adrenaline. Check. It's nice to have a couple of experts around. It is. It's very nice. See, I just watched. I didn't, you know.